got me a job down at the local mill. Work dried up, not a mill is still. I can pay my bills. Repo man is at my door. They used to call us working class, but we're just not working bad. Now the boat won't float, I don't like it. I'm too proud to be poor. They used to call us working class, but we're just not working anymore. We're not a working. We're not a working.
Welcome to the Illinois World Labor Hour. This is WFT 90.1 FM and webcasting at www.wft.org. I'm your host, David Johnson, here with co-host Tom Thomas with his weekly poem, which for this week is Show Our Children, and Bob Pelesny, our technical advisor, to bring you the September 27th, 2008 edition of our weekly update of Union Labor News and Issues. Now we have a special little underwriting announcement. Before Tom reads his underwriting announcement from the AFL-CIO Champaign County, I just want to state that we're proud to have an additional underwriter on our show. They don't have an official underwriting announcement yet. However, our new underwriter is the Illinois Education Association Teachers Union, and it's a co-underwriting between them and the Central Illinois Jobs with Justice.
The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois.
Okay, we have a very special guest on the show, John Ryan. From Oakland, California, and we're going to be talking with him here pretty soon in the show. But first, we have labor news headlines with Tom Thomas.
More than 1 million people have lost their homes through foreclosure in the past 2 years, and many of them are still registered to vote at the address of the home they lost. At this time, election officials and voting rights groups are struggling to prevent thousands of them from losing their vote when they go to the polls in November. Many of these voters will be disqualified at the polls because in the tumult and confusion of their foreclosures, they neglected to tell their local election boards their new addresses. Some could be forced to vote with a provisional ballot or challenged by partisan poll watchers, a particular concern among Democrats who fear that poor voters will be singled out and that could add confusion and stretch out lines that are already expected to be long because of an unprecedented turnout on Election Day. Federal election officials say they are concerned that voters are not being properly informed of how to maintain their voting privileges. Anyone who thinks they may have any problem with their voting privileges should contact their local county clerk to verify their registrations, and this must be done at least 30 days before Election Day. Responding to accusations of abuse of workers at the nation's largest kosher slaughterhouse in Postville, Iowa, an organization of Orthodox Jewish rabbis announced that it was forming a task force to devise Jewish principles and ethical guidelines on the kosher food industries and business in general. The group, the Rabbinical Council of America, said it would publish its results in a written guide. Rabbi Asher Mayer, an author and expert in Jewish business ethics, will lead the task force. Kosher industries have come under a great deal of scrutiny since a May 12, 2008 raid at agriprocessors in Postville resulted in the arrest of nearly 400 illegal immigrants in one of the nation's largest such cases. Iowa state officials say dozens of underage workers were employed there in dangerous jobs and in violation of child labor laws. And finally, record labels, music publishers, songwriters, and online music services have reached an agreement on how to compensate music creators for the online distribution of their content. The agreement, revealed last Wednesday, is designed to settle how the industry calculates royalty rates for limited downloads and music that is streamed online, including when it is provided by a subscription and advertising-supported services. Fans using on-demand music streaming can select the songs they want to hear but do not keep a permanent copy. Under the proposal, providers of such services will pay a royalty of 10.5% of revenue after other royalties are calculated. The Digital Media Association described the agreement as a breakthrough that would facilitate new ways to offer music to customers online. Other groups involved in negotiations include the National Music Publishers Association, which represents American publishers, the Recording Industry Association of America, the Nashville Songwriters Association International, and the Songwriters Guild of America. Dave?
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. As outrage grows over the $700 billion Wall Street bailout proposal, workers, their unions, and political progressives are hitting the streets in protest nationwide. They're demanding that if Congress spends those billions, that workers are protected and jobs created. Labor rallied on Wall Street on Thursday. New York City Central Labor Council Executive Director Ed Ott.
They took over a government that had surpluses and a balanced budget, and they've run it into the ground. And Congress has to now do their job and put America back. If they're going to do a bailout and give $700+ billion to Wall Street, we want them to repeal the Bush tax cuts and take that money and begin to put it towards infrastructure projects, mass transit, healthcare, schools, roads, highways. Get the economy going again.
AFL-CIO Policy Director Thea Lee says some financial bailout action is needed or else workers will be hurt even more than they're already hurting. She says here's what the AFL-CIO wants to see happen.
We need to make sure that we are not throwing away taxpayers' money, that we are not rewarding the people who got us into this problem in the first place, that we are taking care of the real economy, the productive economy that is Main Street. We think it's extremely important to do two things in the context of this. One is to pass a second economic stimulus, a jobs program. It would invest in infrastructure, create good jobs at home, and would also extend unemployment insurance for all those many millions of people who are about to exhaust their unemployment insurance. And then the other piece is also to ensure that we are really helping the homeowners stay in their homes.
In Washington, D.C., the newly formed Main Street Coalition, which includes some organized labor, protested at the White House. Spokesman David Elliott is with U.S. Action and TrueMajority.org.
Within the past 72 hours, We have organized approximately 220 protests across the U.S. All of these protests are happening today in about 35 states. We've been talking to SEIU, we've been talking to AFL-CIO, we've been talking to AFSCME. Labor is a key part of this coalition.
The U.S. House this week voted for $25 billion in low-cost loans for the U.S. auto industry. The loans will allow plant modernization and some retooling. Most foreign automakers with plants in the U.S. are excluded from these loans, which are limited to plants that are at least 20 years old. This isn't a bailout. The money will be repaid. AFL-CIO President John Sweeney had urged Congress to approve these loans. Sweeney says it's one of the most important things Congress can do to stimulate the economy and create tens of thousands of good jobs. Get more labor news at laborradio.org.
Okay, folks, that you heard was the Internationale, written by Eugène Potier in France in 1871. And the Internationale, a lot of people associate with, they think it's the theme song of the past Soviet Union, but that's not the case. It has a tradition many, many years before the Soviet Union was even formed. But anyway, I'd like to welcome our special guest from Oakland, California, John Ryman. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dave.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's great for you to be here, brother. And I call John brother because we're comrade-in-arms, if you will, in the great battle against the evil Satan, Doug McCarron, within the Carpenters Union. And John happened to be leader of a wildcat strike of carpenters out in San Francisco, Oakland, during the summer of 1999. Not against the contractors, the employers, but against their own union that pushing through a crappy contract that was going to give them one-fourth of what the other trades were getting in their contract. And anyway, 2,000 carpenters took things into their own hands and shut down every major building construction job in the city of San Francisco and Oakland for 5 days. And well, unfortunately, John got expelled from the from the Carpenters Union for that by the International. But nevertheless, you know what? We're all proud of him. These guys had to take a stand, and I'm just real happy to honor to have John here. So, John, anyway, you besides being you just retired recently from the Carpenters Union, and you've been doing some quite a bit of writing here. You've got several booklets written, and today I'd like to talk about your most recent one, Capitalism's Perfect Storm.
Well, Dave, just to start, to pick up on what you mentioned about Doug McCarron, the real thing about McCarron and really all the other top labor leaders is that they totally accept the capitalist system with no questions asked. And I think now, more than ever, is a time to really challenge them on this, because we're seeing, we're in the process of seeing the whole world changing around us. And the capitalist system itself I think is increasingly looking like it's going to go into a crisis that will rival the crisis of the 1930s. And the thing that you hear, if you listen to all the different pundits on the radio, even on the more like the Pacifica stations and so on, is they all say, oh, this is a crisis caused by greed, or oh, it's caused by deregulation or corruption and that sort of thing. But I really think that that doesn't even touch the surface. I believe this is a crisis that's caused by the mode of functioning of the capitalist system itself. And first and foremost is the tendency that that Marxists have always explained, the tendency towards overproduction. Very simply, the workers cannot buy back all that they can produce, because if they could, there'd be nothing left for the profit of the bosses. And so what you've had, but as opposed to the period of the 1930s, you have increased state intervention in the economy. And with that, what you've seen, for instance, since the early 1980s, is a massive increase in debt. And what that debt did then was it allowed the system to partially and temporarily overcome that tendency towards overproduction. Just to give one example of that, household financial debt in 1984 equaled $1.9 trillion. By 2006, it was $12.9 trillion.
Oh.
So what was happening was that, of course, we saw the housing prices skyrocketing. Then the homeowners, workers who owned a home, then they couldn't afford all the things that they wanted and needed. And so they dipped into the value of their house, you know, with borrowed on the equity in order to pay for those things. Credit card debt has also just absolutely exploded. And all these things, and as I say, they use this for a period of time to partially overcome this tendency towards overproduction. And, of course, you know, it's just like the floodwaters building up behind a dam. That can continue for an extended period of time, but at some point those waters have to break loose. And that's exactly what's happening. And when they say, oh, well, you know, the problem is that the households, they've run out of debt, run out of credit, and that the housing prices aren't going up anymore. Well, all that is just, and that's where the problem is, all that is just a confession that this has been the whole basis of this economic expansion. And it's basically a question of you can pay me now or you can pay me later, and we're paying later.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's a crisis of the capitalist system itself.
Okay. Now, of course, we've been hearing a lot on the news lately about all these bailouts and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And would you like to comment a little bit about that,
yeah,
how that ties in?
Well, if you, in the first place, as far as the bailout that's under consideration, and I think they'll undoubtedly pass it, just simply in terms of the economy itself, and we'll get to the second part of why it's an absolute ripoff. But, okay, they're talking about $700 billion. In order to bail out the banks and other financial houses. Well, the way they're going to raise that money is by selling treasury notes. So then if you are looking to lend money, I don't mean you as an individual, but some big financial institution or these government funds that they have from the oil exporting countries, a treasury note is one of the safest loans that you can give. And so you have a choice between making a loan to the U.S. Treasury or making a loan to General Motors. So you're going to make a loan to the U.S. Treasury by buying treasury notes. So that means that General Motors or any other company, or you, if you're trying to buy a home or buy a car, that if you want to get a loan, you have to pay even higher interest rates. The costs are going to go up. So they cannot, it really, in the medium term, that this bailout is actually going to be a disaster for the U.S. economy, even just on the terms of capitalism itself. It's going to be a disaster for the U.S. economy because the interest rates will go up. A lot of homeowners that are now teetering on the brink, you know, who have the adjustable rate mortgages, their rates are going to go up. They're going to lose their homes. That'll have a whole cascading effect. Businesses that can't get the credit that they usually use just to operate from month to month, they're going to be going under and laying people off. So really what's behind this, if you look at that bailout, it's what Naomi Klein talked about, the shock doctrine, where It's putting the same financial institutions in charge of administering this money. It's just further privatizing everything, and it's just a means of increasing the looting and plundering of society unfettered by these giant financial houses, by finance capital.
You know, last week we were talking about this, and this reminded me of your statement, Bob. You were saying that when you were watching some of these news programs about how you said, I can't remember, was it Schumer from New York, said he was absolutely terrified after he was given a presentation?
Right. That was last week, Thursday, when Paulson and Bernanke went in front of some of the members of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And they have that suspicion that the entire financial system is collapsing.
Yeah, and but the words you used, that you said Schumer said that he was absolutely terrified by what they presented. Right. This fits right into the Naomi Klein analysis of what these people have done in the past as far as frightening people and basically using a shock in order to push through their agenda. This also, another parallel I think about is both the invasion of Iraq and the passage of the Patriot Act. It was like, do it now, do it now, do it now, or the sky's going to fall, trying to get people to rush into it without thinking about it or reading through it completely.
That's an important point, Dave. Yeah, this rush to let's get it done yesterday.
Uh-huh.
That's like you mentioned about the shock doctrine. They've used the tsunami. They use Hurricane Katrina. They use military coups. They use, and they've used in other countries in the past, economic crises, which is what they're using now to so terrify people that they say, well, you have to do something, anything, and here's what we have to do. And what we have to do is actually further fill the coffers of these finance capital at whose expense.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as the details of this, you said you read that first it was a 3.5-page document, now they've upped it to 90, right?
Well, 2.5 pages.
Oh, sorry, 2.5 pages.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was, I also heard somewhere, and I'm not sure this is true, but that they've been 6 months preparing this. So they say, oh, it's just this sudden crisis. But this is just like they spent how many years preparing the invasion of Iraq,
mm-hmm.
you know? This is just part of what they've been doing over the last, 20, 25 years under Republican and Democratic administrations alike. They've been preparing for it. They prepared for it under Clinton
mm-hmm.
when they changed the bankruptcy laws so that now as everybody's going bankrupt, they still are responsible for their debts. They've been preparing for this sort of thing for a long time.
But this also reminds me a lot of the Patriot Act, and it says that currently Paulson, but whoever the future Secretary of the Treasury is going to have extraordinary powers, that a lot of these deals are going to basically supersede any conflict of interest laws. Can you talk a little bit about that?
That's right. I mean, the original proposal was that the Secretary of the Treasury would be in charge of this with no oversight whatsoever. But And now they say, well, the Congress is going to provide oversight. Oh, yeah, like they provided oversight over the Iraq War. But in any case, the other part of it, which I haven't, as far as I'm, as I've heard, it's still in there, is that the dispensing and the administering of these funds, which is certain to be over $700 billion, incidentally, that the administering of these funds is going to be done by private institutions. Now, who are the private institutions that are going to do it? It's obvious it's going to be the finance houses. And not only that, but what was in the original law, which again, I haven't heard this being challenged at all, so I believe it's still in there, is that all the rest of U.S. law will not apply. That is to say, conflict of interest laws, I would assume the normal bookkeeping laws and all that sort of thing. So, I mean, all it is just a massive ripoff that's actually going to make the economic crisis worse. Oh, one other point that I wanted to say about the longer-term effects of this is that you're going to have a massive increase in the U.S. foreign debt, which also is going to mean then that the value of the dollar is going to fall.
Yes, I was wondering about that. I was going to ask you about that, the value of the dollar, and what kind of will this have any effect on oil prices?
Well, of course it will, because if the value of the dollar falls, then oil prices and the prices of everything else are going to go up. And so you're having a bailout of the corporations. I want to know what kind of bailout of the working class are we going to have?
Good question, John. Okay, on that note, we're going to take a little musical break here, and then we're going to come back with Tom Thomas's Poem of the Week, and definitely back to John Ryman right after that.
They used to tell me I was building a dream, and so I followed the mob. When there was earth to plow or guns to bear, I was always there, right on the job. They used to tell me I was building a dream with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line, just waiting for bread? Once I built a railroad, I made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower up to the sun, brick and rivet and lime. Once I built a tower, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, gee, we look swell, full of that Yankee doodly down. Half a million boots went slogging through hell, and I was the kid with the drum. Say, don't you remember? They called me Al. It was Al all the time. Why don't you remember? I'm your pal. Say, buddy, can you spare a dime?
Okay, we're back. That was Brother, Can You Spare a Dime, written shortly after the stock market crash in 1929. That version was sung by Bing Crosby. It was originally written by Hal Yarberg. And hopefully we're not going to be singing that song here anytime soon, but it's not looking too good, of course, with inflation. That'd be Brother, Can You Spare a Buck now, more or less. But anyway, with no further ado, we are now at that time of the Labor Hour Cultural Corner with the weekly poem by Tom Thomas, Show Our Children.
Our government bails out banks with the tax dollars that we pay, and the taxpayers get no thanks but have their homes taken away. Insurance companies get rich by not doing what they're paid for. Every victim that they can ditch is quickly booted out the door. Hippocrates would be ashamed of what has become of health care. For that, the government can be blamed by we who know that it's unfair. Are there any solutions here in a nation that is dying? Is world peace anywhere near, or will toy soldiers just keep lying? Let's bail out the citizens and let each know their home is theirs, and not the banking denizens with all their lying, cheating airs. Let's force insurance companies to pay the debts that they have due, whether it be to fight disease or make your wrecked car run like new. Let's mandate universal health and make it a law nationwide to be paid for with excess wealth of all the CEOs who've lied. There can only be world peace when we all are truly social. One way the aggression can cease is for us all to be vocal. Be vocal with our unity in marching shoulder to shoulder. Show our children a land that's free before they all get much older. Show Our Children was written at the Poets Loft in Champaign, Illinois on September 25th, 2008, and was first recited live September 27th, 2008 on the Illinois World Labor Hour on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, community radio for East Central Illinois.
In February's primary election, 71% of Champaign Township voters passed an advisory referendum asking the township trustees to restore the level of general assistance. The funding is for the poorest of the poor in Champaign. Let's keep that momentum going. Join us. Walk with us on Saturday, October 4th at 11 a.m. for the 5th Annual Unity March, kicking off at the Champaign Township Building on the corner of Green and Randolph. Let's further demonstrate that we are a community that cares by going to the polls on November 4th and voting yes on the township referendum. Help our friends and neighbors who are in most need. Join us Saturday, October 4th for the 5th Annual Unity March. Let's get together and send a message to the citizens of Champaign that we are a community that cares. Saturday, October 4th, we'll see you at the march. This is a message brought to you by CU Citizens for Peace and Justice.
To make a better situation. Tomorrow, our seeds will grow. All we need is dedication.
Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. It's an art that Peter is told. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Great God will come from the sky, take away everything and make everybody feel high. But if you know what life is worth, you would look for yours on earth. And now you see the light, you stand up for your rights. Yeah.
Get up, stand up.
Yeah, yeah.
Stand up for your rights.
Okay, folks, we heard a promo for the Unity March coming up here next Saturday, October 4th. The Unity March starts at 11 a.m. on the corner of Randolph and Green Street in front of the Township Assessor's Office. And it's going to march up Randolph to, I think, University, then up Walnut, and then down Washington Street to 4th, up 4th, and then over, I think, Tremont to Douglas Park, where the rally is going to end and everything. And I've been to three of the five. This is the fifth one, and they're always a lot of fun. A lot of fun to get people out in the community and everything. So I just want to state that the views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Area Incorporated. And yes, folks, definitely you would not hear any of these views expressed that we do weekly on the Illinois Labor Hour. And especially, I don't think any corporate radio station would have John Ryman on the air talking about the economic crisis.
Well, they have a lot of people on talking about it, but they don't point out, as I said, that it's a crisis of the capitalist system itself. But I wanted to comment on the community service announcement that you had about this march, this Unity March, because I think that that's another point, and I wish I was going to be in town when it happens, because I would love to participate in it. But I think also that we, those of us who have spent a lifetime organizing this sort of thing and trying to get people to get up, stand up for your rights, like Bob Marley says, that, you know, we have to recognize that the whole world is changing around us. And what was not possible before or what was extremely difficult before, we have to, and therefore many people retreated really from trying to do it, that this is a totally different situation. And what I'm referring to is, you know, if you take the last 25 years or so, when it appeared that not just capitalism, but U.S. capitalism was firmly in the saddle, was firmly in the driver's seat, and that it was just unshakable in its power, not just in the United States, but all around the world. And now that whole situation is, and I should just say that a lot of us as activists, you know, we'd set our goals very low, our sights very low. And also, we just kind of would feel like, okay, the guy or the sister that I'm working alongside of, or my next door neighbor, or the one who's just trying to get through the day and get enough money to buy groceries for the coming week, that they're not really going to be interested in challenging the system. And because they just felt like the system was unchallengeable. Well, now that's changing. And so those are exactly the people that we have to direct ourselves, I think, much more consciously towards. And the other point is that up until now, a lot of people, I think, who maybe in a private conversation would say, yeah, capitalism stinks and I'm a socialist or whatever, but they wouldn't say that openly. And they wouldn't directly raise that this is a problem of capitalism, because capitalism seemed like it was just going along just great.
Mm-hmm.
Even if a lot of people were poor, but still the system seemed to be stable. And all of that is over now.
You know, there was a similar crisis that happened in one particular country back about 8 years ago, and that was when Argentina, in mm-hmm. Argentina, when the economy collapsed. And what was interesting there was that the people, you know, the working people, just had to take things into their own hands, in the sense that, you know, the whole economy collapsed. The government was broke, and the people that did have some money still basically took all their money and left and went to Miami or the French Riviera or whatever, and left all these abandoned factories and everything else, shut them down, laid everybody else, and just abandoned the factories. And the workers basically occupied the factories and started production again.
That was shown in that movie, The Take.
Yes, by Naomi Klein, exactly. And it wasn't easy, of course. I mean, because, you know, once the workers started the factories up again, and the owners of those factories found out, the ones who had abandoned them found out, they basically went and got court orders to evict them. They were told, the workers were told, you have to leave now, we have a court order. They said no. The police attacked. I mean, they had pitched battles with the police. I mean, this was you know, no easy thing. But eventually, what happened, it was the judiciary in Argentina, and we all know anywhere in the world that the judges are not the most open-minded, caring people, let's put it that way. They eventually sided with the workers, because they said, first of all, you know, the state, both the national, provincial, and local governments need tax revenues, workers need jobs, and also everybody in the society needs goods, everything from shoes to pasta to whatever. So, I mean, that was one example of a of an alternative, let's say, to capitalism, and that would be an economy of direct owner, direct worker ownership of mm-hmm. Of various industries and stuff. Now, I really don't want to get into a debate, because also there's another method, which is what more like what Hugo Chavez is doing in Venezuela, which is actual nationalization, where the national government actually owns or takes over certain industries. And just let everyone know, you know, a lot of times when this subject's brought up, people immediately just jump to the conclusion about the old Soviet Union. But a lot of people don't realize that, you know, ownership by the national government existed in a lot of countries around the world, even capitalist countries like Germany and France, and even England owned the railroads and the healthcare system and a lot of other things. So I guess what I'm throwing out here is the alternatives.
Well, I think, number one, as far as what we should be, what should be our goals, I mean, I think, number one, while they're nationalizing the debt, or at least a tiny portion of it, which is that $700 billion to $1 trillion, which sounds like a lot of money, but compared to what the act... I was reading that, incidentally, that the derivatives market in the United States is $180 trillion. So it just gives you a sense of proportion.
$180 trillion?
That was one figure that I was given. And I don't think anybody really knows what it is.
Okay, it's just, and that is why. I mean, can you explain to our listeners a little about the derivatives market?
It's what do they call it? They call it The official term is market to price to market. That is, they set a price.
Mark to market. Yeah.
Mark to market, right? Which is thank you. Which means, you know, they'll set a price according to what the market value is. But what they've been calling it more and more is market to myth, because because the value. They just come up with all kinds of wild declarations of what the value actually is. But what I think is that look, these the finance capital is now in the process of proving beyond any shadow of doubt that it is a complete disaster for that wing of capitalism, which is in control now, that is a complete disaster for the average person in this country and around the world. And if we're going to nationalize the debt, then let's nationalize the wealth too. Let's take over the banks, the big financial institutions. And here's where it isn't being done elsewhere, as far as I know. But what I would say is also it has to be done under workers' control and management. And that leads back to the question of the unions, because together with that, I would say that there should be a mass organizing campaign aimed at the workers that work in the banks, the finance houses, the stock market, and so on. Get them unionized with union rights, and if you have to violate the law in order to do that, which is the way that unions were organized in the first place in this country, then so be it. And then that it these banks, then when they're nationalized, that it be under the control of the worker, the unionized workers themselves, plus the depositors in the banks, so that if you have a $100 checking account or you have a $500 savings account, one depositor, one vote.
Not regardless of the amount of money they have.
If I have $1 million in there and you have 100, you get the same vote as me.
Mm-hmm.
So
it'd be like a cooperative bank, more or less.
Yeah, except obviously this can't just be done on a local level. This has to be done nationally with a national plan then for how to disperse these funds. And I want to get back also to the question of the unions, because I was sent an email the other day about a resolution that was passed by the San Francisco Labor Council to send some letter to Congress saying, objecting to the bailout and all this kind of stuff. And it was supposed to be so wonderful. And I have to say, in all honesty, I doubt one union member in 100 in San Francisco ever even heard of this resolution. So what good does it really do? And there was the protest the other day down on Wall Street I heard about. Where were the unions? If any union leader is really serious in this period right now with what's happening, is really serious about fighting for their members and fighting for working class people, they should be organizing the protests and in front of the different financial institutions and link that up with an organizing campaign for union rights for these workers.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a short little break here, and we'll be right back in a moment with John Ryman.
Poor.
Them and them economical plan still can't find a solution. Borrowing money for lend. World Bank and our friend. Life and death, all are we afraid. Life and death, freedom not yet. Farmers get a blow, foreign food so I saw American farmers get a upper hand. While our farmers going one by one. Bankrupt, P/, new flash. Big boy hide him stash. No money, no job. Borrowing money filling. Capitalism and our friend. It's life and death, all are we afraid. Life and death, freedom not yet. It's life and death, all are we afraid. Life and death, freedom not yet. Carry come, carry gone, everything. Too much importing. Debt increase, country the police. Politicians are fraud. The people draw a bad card. Things no cool. Them take with a fool.
The best things in life are free. But you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money. That's what I want. That's what I want. That's what a thrill. But your love won't pay my bills. I want money. That's what I want. Don't get everything, it's true. What it don't get, I can't use. I want money.
Okay, we're back, and we have a few more minutes here left. And John, thanks again for coming in. You're listening to the Illinois World Labor Hour, broadcast from downtown Champaign at 90.1 FM and webcast worldwide, www.weft.org. Okay, John, you said during the break that you'd like to kind of talk a little bit here towards the end about the elections.
Well, of course, that's directly connected with what we've been talking about so far. But, you know, Dave, you and I were watching the debate last night, and Dave almost had a heart attack. He got so angry. But the thing to me is what was really basic is the both the candidates, they kept talking about we this and we that and we this and us and we. And I'm thinking, well, who are you talking about when you say we? And really what the, I mean, there's three carpenters here in the hall, here, sitting here in this studio.
Yes, I want to introduce to the listeners the third carpenter here in the studio is Brother Eric Hemphill.
And
welcome to the show, Eric. I've been trying to get you on for a while, and he decided he'd come down here and sit in for a while. But one of these days, I'm going to get him on, and he's going to actually do some talking here.
Thank you.
Okay.
But, you know, I mean, just if you take the average working person in this country, what do we have in common with somebody like Hank Paulson, who incidentally nobody, none of the major candidates, nobody, none of the Democrats has ever pointed this out. He's the Secretary of the Treasury who has been pushing this bailout bill. And who is he? He was the underling of Ehrlichman, who was the guy that one of the criminals that went to jail under the Nixon administration. Then he went to become the CEO of Goldman Sachs. He was one of the main architects of all of this financialization, pushing of the debt and all of that. And, of course, he benefited enormously from it. He's worth now some $500 million. He is nothing but a representative of finance capital. And nobody is pointing this out. This is who is pushing all of this. And when you talk about we, really that's who the we is. Is the Hank Paulsons of the world, him and his buddies and his cronies. That is who the we is, and us as working class people, we have absolutely nothing in common with them. The we for us is that worker in Iraq who's trying to organize a union, or in Germany, or the workers in Argentina that you're talking about, or those workers in Nigeria who are fighting against the looting and plundering of the giant oil companies, that is who we are. And that class question is never, ever brought up by anybody in U.S. politics. And the reason is, really, is because they all represent the giant corporations.
Yes, and Bob, you want to mention something about the upcoming elections here as far as voter registration?
Right. I'd just like to remind people, I think the final day to update your voter registration is October 6th. I think it's got to be like 28 days before the election, November 4th.
Okay.
So if you moved or anything like that, changed your name, if you got married or anything in the last couple of years, you know, we really would say get down to the county clerk's office and get your voter registration updated.
Okay, very good. All right.
So I want to get back also, you know, you mentioned this little book that I've put out, Capitalism's Perfect Storm. And I'm sure people will remember that film where the series of storms converged over the Atlantic.
The film Perfect Storm.
Yeah,
okay.
The Perfect Storm, right. Mm-hmm. And which is obviously where this title comes from. And that's exactly what we have, what we are seeing today is not just the economic crisis that we're facing, but also, you have a situation where U.S. capitalism, which for the last 20, 25 years has rode roughshod over the entire world completely unchallenged, you now have a series of other capitalist powers, in particular China and Russia, who are now arising as rivals to U.S. imperialism. So the whole world system is being shaken by that. And then on top of that, you have the environmental disaster, which is waiting, it's kind of lingering in the background with the economic crisis, but global warming first and foremost, peak oil, the dumping of just thousands of toxic chemicals into the environment, which nobody knows what the long-term consequences are of these.
You know, John, just I don't interject here real quickly. This is something that's very unique about your book. I mean, not to say that this subject hasn't been touched on in other, disciplines or formats, but the way you tie in, you put a lot of emphasis on the environmental impact in your economic analysis.
Right.
And it doesn't seem that's been done, if at all, very little, to my knowledge anyway.
Well, it's something that's fairly new to the workers' movement. If you take, you know, the history of the workers' movement going back 150 or so years, and it's actually fairly new to the socialist movement. And a lot of people who have been in the socialist movement for years, they just don't really recognize that this is a new issue that's unexpected for us. But also, what the environmentalists don't recognize is, or the majority of them, not every single one, is that this is directly connected with capitalism, which is based on short-term profit. And if I can dump a bunch of toxic chemicals in your backyard or in your living room, you know, and that provides me with a profit tomorrow, and I can get away with it, then so be it.
That's called externalizing costs.
That's what they call it,
yeah.
Right,
mm-hmm.
Right.
And it's leading to extermination.
Exactly, yeah. So, but just as far as a couple of basic points that I think that we who've been, you know, those of us who have been trying to get working class people to fight the system, you know, that we should think about. You know, David, you and I went out the other day to distribute leaflets for this march, this Unity March. And one thing that we did, there was a couple of young women sitting on their front porch, and we went up and gave them a leaflet. And as we were coming back, they called us over. And they were very interested in it. And then one of them commented about a problem she's having. I believe it was with Section 8 housing.
Well, no, she was in private housing, but she's getting ready to be evicted. Yes.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. But it was some government agency that she was having a problem with.
Yes,
trying to get
Section 8, yes.
And I believe that one of the things that we have to turn to a little bit more, to somebody like that, the idea of fighting the whole system might seem a bit overwhelming. But I think she was ready to fight for her rights within the system as far as getting I think she wanted some funding to pay a deposit for a new place or something like that. And as one lone voice, as one isolated individual, She doesn't stand much of a chance. But those of us who are organizing things like this march, I think that we need to get together and go to people like that and say, look, get a couple of your family members. If you have kids, bring them along. We'll get some people, and we'll go down together to challenge this government agency to fight for what you want. And that way, you can start to get a whole layer of people that up until now have not been active to start to get active fighting collectively.
Yeah, when you said that to her, her eyes kind of got a little big, like, and you immediately said, "We don't have, we're not to do any crazy, anything crazy right. or anything, just to have people there to show that you're not alone." It makes right. all the difference. And you've had some personal experience with this
right.
for tenants' rights.
There was that whole issue back in Alameda, California, where they were basically going to wipe out Section 8, which they'd been doing, or make a huge cut in it, which they'd been doing with success throughout the country. And we got together with some Section 8 tenants through this campaign for renters' rights. We got together with some Section 8 tenants. We had big marches, protests. We marched in and kind of semi-disrupted their big 4th of July parade, to the point that the person in charge of that program in Alameda flew back to Washington, D.C., where they suddenly discovered a, quote, bookkeeping error, and nearly $750,000 was freed up to restore that Section 8. And that shows what can be done just on a very, and that was just a very small scale protest, really. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, things start getting bad. I mean, that's what seems has to happen, is that we need to organize and, you know, basically within our communities, amongst ourselves in various occupations, you know, because self-help, basically mutual aid and support, I guess, is what we're going to have to do through these hard times, and to basically get back power to control society, because that's where the power needs to be, is from the citizens, from the working people, and not these investment bankers and these other people that have been just driving us into the ground. John, do you have one closing statement here?
I'd like to leave people to ponder the profound words of wisdom of our illustrious president when he said just recently, in reference to this economy, he said, "This sucker's going down."
Oh, well, on that note, we're going to leave you here with a little Public Enemy called Things That Make You Blind.
Yow! Look out! Come on now! I can feel it now. Y'all got me feeling like Ray Charles up in the air. I feel it all, I believe all the way to my soul. You got me feeling like Stevie Wonder, what the hell is going on? Blind, they still can't see. Weapons of mass distraction. Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Rap like hell, make it sound like heaven. 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Black Superman is back as your hero. Hear ye, hear yo. America, the beautiful, beautiful, the plentiful. Now look, it's sort of pitiful. A third of the world at war. Wait a minute, gotta take care of that rock if y'all wanna live in it. Medicine and Medicaid, cause they don't care. Your favorite millionaire is in the air. See him everywhere, but they ain't there. So rally and protest, cause the world in fear. Now people, people, can we take it to the square? Yeah, yeah. Now, you don't matter, and they don't mind, cause these be the things that make you blind. Come on. Hypocrite, same thing, nothing worse than a new black church who be lying on the truth cause it hurts. Black man came first in the sweet name of Jesus, cost me a dollar at the floor of Creflo. Like how the hell he's supposed to know I see the ass in the name of a lie running to the radio. In the TV issues and views shaped by one-sided news, got us like Planet of the Apes on the CDs and tapes. Preach me, young cats asking all heads teach me. Yeah, ab of a beast that reach me. Radiation of a radio, TV, movie nation on your goddamn mind. Makes you blind. You don't matter and they don't mind, cause these be the things that make you blind. I say, you don't matter and they don't mind, cause these be the things that make you blind.
Come on. Makes you blind. Makes you blind.
Makes
you blind. Makes you blind.
Come on,
make you blind.
Now,
make you blind.
Now,
make you blind.
Now, to what I said, cause these be the facts that's gonna blow your head. Y'all know what I said when I say no to thugs. Thug life runs at the top and y'all thought it was pop. These government gangsters making robots who forgot. Hypnotic in a 2000 by 3000 mile box. 35 years old, lost in an Xbox, PlayStation and video, so that's how it goes. The world begins and ends at the tip of their nose. It ain't Eminem, it's Eminem and them. McDonald's, MTV, and Microsoft. Can't you see they got the young strong at a cost? Yes, it's that treacherous three. Go off, go off. Now, you don't matter if they don't mind, cause these be the things that make you blind. I say, you don't matter if they don't mind, cause these be the things that